We're putting a poll up on the Instagram page. What's more likely to happen in 2025? Nick shoots a big buck or Nick gets a girlfriend? That's the bet.
Or C, neither.
I know which one you're working on more.
Well, yeah. In the fall time, I spent a lot of time on both of them and struck out both times. So, you know, is what it is, I guess. Welcome back to Knox Nature, the podcast about archery, hunting, hiking, conservation, firearms, and whatever else you feel like talking about. Episode 16 today, and we have just a couple days left of January as we're recording this. Because this drops, I want to say, the 6th? No. I'm way behind. This drops the last day of January, the 31st.
Yeah.
Finally getting a little bit ahead on our recording schedule, so it's not a last-minute thing here, but that's all right.
This is the first time we've done it on a Sunday in a while.
It's been a minute. Yeah, we talked about that last episode. You know, it was just...
And it's still light outside.
It's still light out, yeah. Most of the time on Sundays, it was like we'd record at, you know, 9 o'clock by the time we start. So, yeah, there's that. We're getting better. We're getting better, all right? That's what I can say. So, yeah. I don't think we didn't have any housekeeping or anything like that. We do have some cool stuff going on, so we can get into that. Jared and I got a couple, well, each of us got a new gun, so we could break that down. I also want to talk to you about red dots a little bit, because I'm trying to figure out what I'm putting on that gun.
Yeah.
Justin got what I think is a pretty cool video, and we'll talk about that later. We should also post that on the Instagram. So,
oh, that'd be cool. Did I send that to you guys?
You sent it to me, yeah.
Oh, okay. I can't remember.
So, yeah, we'll talk about that. But nothing too crazy. Justin and I just got done skiing, so, you know, that was fun.
Yeah.
It was a slow day, too. Slow day. Whoa.
My bad.
Slow day for us, but there's a lot of skiers there. Like, slow as in we couldn't maneuver, you know, all over the place. And then they started closing stuff down.
That last run was the busiest that I've ever seen one run, and I was just avoiding people the entire time.
We came down the face, sucked. And Justin went around to the blue, and I came down Goosebumps on the black there. Nobody was on Goosebumps, and I looked to my left, and there's like probably 15 people coming down the hill at the same time as Justin, and I was like, hey, dude. And you get to the bottom, and he's like, I couldn't move anywhere. There's so many people. I was like, you should have gone down the face with me.
And it was weird because they were all slower than I was, so I was having to weave in, and which, like, I'm slow.
Yeah, you should try skiing at Kever Face sometime and going down a green run.
Is it like that?
Yeah. Literally every day.
I was like, man, this is terrible.
Dude, we got over to the Red Lift today at Shush.
Yeah, Justin was telling me. Sounds like fun.
You would love it. You would love it. It was so cool. What you've talked about, it was awesome. There's the steepest hills there are on red. That one is like real steep. So those are the only spots on the hill that are double blacks. So
double black, Michigan double
blacks. Right. Yeah. But still, it was cool. Mm-hmm. It was a good time.
We went down that one black. That we went down the first day.
Yeah.
Probably, what, 4 times? Something?
The one by Pink?
Yeah.
Is that a black?
Yeah.
Oh. For some reason, I thought that was blue.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, we went down it quite a few times. I mean, I tried to hit...
I only fell once.
I tried getting him to hit that kicker. You know, up at the top, you ride to the left and then drop in.
Yeah.
I tried getting him to hit that, and he was like... Oh, yeah, I'll try it, whatever. And they just bailed.
Yeah.
He's
like, nah.
I looked at it. I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot more comfortable.
The one thing with that is it's not really like a jump where it boots you or anything. You kind of just drop.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot more comfortable, though.
Yeah.
I hit some good jumps and stuff, and that was...
Oh, yeah. He actually did hit some jumps that were pretty decent. We were both... I fell a couple of times, mainly just because I was, like...
Bad.
I don't think it was anything to do with how I was hitting the jump. It had to do with landing the jump. And I would just, like, land on an edge and try to... Oh, Windows is going crazy. I would land on an edge and try to, like, continue that speed, but then I'd try to change direction or something, and that's when I would end up, you know, biffing it. But
yeah, you had a rough start just trying to pop off little things. Just kept on eating shit.
Yeah. It was not good.
Just the littlest,
dude,
little thing, he'd pop up and then just...
We were... Because we came around on I don't know if it was a green or a blue, but I popped up on this little knuckle, and I don't even know exactly what happened. Like, I tried to, like, land, for whatever reason, tried to land, like, toe side, you know, facing the hill, and just, like, skate out, and I, like, came too far back and fell backwards, and then I did the exact same thing but fell forwards. What's going on? Windows, I don't think the audience can hear that, but Windows is just, like, giving me a bunch of update alerts. Hold on just 1 second. Let me take care of this. It's gone now, so whatever. Hopefully it doesn't keep doing that, because that's annoying. But no, it was a good time skiing. So.
It was fun. I got my new boots.
Yeah?
And they were a lot different, or a lot more different than what I felt like they were going to be. It took me a while to get used to them.
Yeah.
He said this, felt like the back end of his skis were sliding out.
It was really weird.
Hmm.
They just felt a lot different. I don't know.
We'll see how it is once you get your new skis, though.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll feel.
And I figured it out after a couple runs or whatever. It seemed like it was all right, but
that was another thing too. Is like, because that's only the, I think it's the third time I've been on that board this year, like separate day.
Yeah.
And so when we first started, I think that was part of it. Is I was telling Justin on the hill, like, I have to make a lot more conscious decision to initiate any of my turns, because I have to lean a little bit further to hit that edge because it's a rocker style board.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense. But it just felt like I would move for my turn, but I wouldn't move enough, so it wasn't actually like biting anything. I would just like slip out and biff it. So, there's that. That Windows update is...
Dude.
My computer's going crazy right now.
It's never done that before.
No. Normally, it'll quit it after a while, but this is like 10 times now. So, yeah, let me just turn the volume down on that too, but... We got new guns. So, Jared, do you want to talk about yours first?
Sure. Yeah, I got a another SIG P320. This one's a lot better than the one that I had before. Before, I had very base model, just full size black plastic grip, basically the M17 without a red dot cut.
Did you get rid of that?
No, I didn't get rid of it.
Oh.
Okay. Not yet. I don't know if I will or not, but and then the one I got now is the AXG frame with black grip modules and the 4.7-inch Pro Cut slide.
He has, like, the coolest all-black AXG you could make.
Yeah.
It does look pretty cool.
I want to put the walnut grips on it and a threaded barrel and a red dot. And then maybe a Streamlight. Olight makes some nice stuff, too, though.
Yeah. I was talking to Keegan, and with my gun, I already put a Streamlight on it. So I bought a Shadow Systems DR920 Elite with the 5-inch threaded barrel. So it's basically a bougie Glock 17 with added serrations, it's MOS cut, ported slide, upgraded barrel, upgraded trigger, whatever, flared magwell, adjustable back straps, fucking suppressor ride sights. There's, you know, a million different things with it. But essentially, it's just a bougie Glock 17. And I put a Streamlight TLR 1 on it. TLR 1S, I think, is technically what it is. Which means it's just like a little bit more focus. There's not as much throw, like outwards. It's it can, but it has a longer range.
I had the HL.
Yeah, that's what my brother has.
Yeah.
So I was going to originally I wanted to put the Surefire X300 or something like that on it, which is a very similar light to the TLR one, but all of the reviews that I read on the thing were like, you know, it functions really well, whatever. But every now and then they had an issue with the button because the button's really small on the Surefire.
Hmm.
It's like a little tab down. And then I watched a guy torture test him on YouTube, and the Surefire never, or the Streamlight never failed. The Surefire failed once.
Really?
And so he was like, you know, for the price, I would go with the Streamlight. And then I talked to Keegan because I was like, you know, the only reason I really wanted the Surefire was because it was made in the U.S. Like, I don't really care what brand it is. And then I was like, if I'm already buying a Chinese product, I'll just buy an Olight because I can get 1,500 lumens instead of 300. But he also brought to my attention, like, yes, it's going to do 1,500, but it's like the Arkfeld. It's like, it'll do 1,500 lumens for 2 minutes, and that's right back down to 300 because it just kills the battery. He's like, so you pretty much have a 300 lumen light anyway. It is $50 cheaper than the Streamlight, but Streamlight is an American company that have their stuff that, like, at least at the TLR1 that I bought, it said assembled in the U.S. with foreign materials. So they have certain components and, you know, whatever, source their aluminum or whatever in other countries, and then it's assembled in the U.S., whatever that's supposed to mean.
Yeah.
But it's at least an American company, whereas Olight is either Chinese or Japanese. I don't remember which one. I think it's Chinese. And Olight makes great stuff. I carry an Olight every day. I love it, but for a gun light, and with that gun, you know, that's another big reason why I went with the Shadow Systems instead of just buying a Glock and upgrading it. The Shadow Systems is made in the U.S. You know what I'm saying? So that was kind of my motivation behind that. And now I got to figure out what kind of red light to put on, or red light, red dot to put on top of it. Because my biggest thing with that gun is, like, I want it to be a nightstand gun, right? And so that's just like a, you know, you need a pistol right now type of deal, just grab it. And what I noticed the other night, like, because I, you know, there's no miners in our house, right? So I have my guns just sitting on my nightstand. And my SIG was sitting there with the Vortex Defender on top of it. And then I had my Shadow Systems there. Well, the Shadow System has night sights on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they glow up like a flashlight in the dark. I mean, you can see them really well. Same, the SIG's got a front post normally that, like, whatever. But what I found was, like, if you grab that gun in total darkness and try to find your sights, even if I were to turn on the flashlight of the Shadow Systems and try to align my iron sights in the dark like that, it's really difficult because the top of the gun isn't illuminated. Whereas if I grab my SIG, all I need to do is find that red dot and I'm good. Like, wherever that dot is where it's going, or pretty close to it, right? And so that was just another selling point for me where it's like, I can shoot with iron sights, but with my SIG, I've already gotten used to shooting with the red dot. And so I would consider myself equally good or equally bad, which depending on how you look at it, I would consider myself equal with iron sights and the red dot on my gun right now. And so for me, it's like, once you get used to using the red dot, that target acquisition is so much faster.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And then being able to see it at night, for me, it's a no-brainer. But I understand when guys are like, you know, iron sights, dude. so much easier to learn how to use. Like, it's simple. They're very reliable. You know, it's really hard to break iron sights. So I get it, but
red dots are pretty tough too, though.
Yeah, it's true. I mean,
they're
especially
meant to be
small,
smacked around.
Especially like those micro pistol lights, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I understand, like, I know a lot of guys. Granted, most of the guys I talk to about this are guys like my brother who are in law enforcement and doing stuff like that, where they're like, we love high-end optics, right? Like, they run EOTech, you know, ACOGs and bunch of, you know, Aimpoint. There's a bunch of, like, really nice optics, LPVOs, red dots, even scopes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother's like, yeah, I love all of that. His main AR, his main personal AR, he has a red dot with a magnifier to it. And he's like, but I won't get rid of my iron sights, because at the end of the day, I can just pull this off and I still have my iron sights. I'm good. So, and I know you're an iron sight guy, because you can shoot with iron sights pretty well. A lot better than I can.
Yeah, probably.
So there's kind of that piece too, is like, depending on who you are and what the application is. I mean, if you're putting it on, if you have like a lightweight hunting rifle, you're going to take out west and you're like, oh, I'm going elk hunting. I expect to take a shot from, you know, 300 yards or something like that. So I've got this nice scope on a 300 Win Mag or something like that. You know, you're carrying around a Mark V or something like that. You're probably not putting iron sights on that just in case your optic fails. You're probably going to make sure that you take good enough care of that gun to where that optic's not going to fail.
Yeah.
But for any like firefight situation or like a carry gun, it's nice to have both options, you know. So there's that.
Oh, I remember my first actual IDPA competition was a night one.
Oh yeah.
And I didn't have any red dot, and it was just, I mean, we did just fine. When you're actually doing it and like shooting in the dark and whatnot, you can, it works a lot better than you think.
Well, I'm sure a lot of
and
that
I didn't
too
even
is,
have night sights.
Well, and I'm sure a lot of that too is like I'm sure you had shot that gun in the daylight before you did that competition at night, right?
Yeah.
So some of that is like muscle memory, so to speak, you know, where it's you know relatively where it's going to go. And I understand what you're saying, because as long as your target is illuminated in some way, you'll have a slight, like, at least silhouette of your sights. But, you know, again, that's it. Just a lot of that comes down to preference.
Yeah, it's just preference and what you're used to.
And then, like, you get into red dots. Like, I was convinced 2 months ago I hadn't decided if I was going with the Shadow Systems or the AXG, like, what Jared was going to do or what he did. I was going to buy one of those. But, you know, I was convinced I was going to buy an RMR. And the most annoying part of the RMR is that you spend, depending on the model, you spend between like $500 and $700 on a red dot. You put it on your gun, you sight the thing in, and then anytime you want to replace that battery, you have to take the red dot off because it's bottom loading. And that's
didn't
just...
Didn't they change that with the new ones?
With the SRO, but the RMR is still bottom loading.
Really?
There might be a couple, a model out there or something like that, but most of them are still bottom loading.
That's so weird. I don't know why they would make something like that.
I don't know either. It's really...
I've already had to change the battery on mine.
Was that your Holosun?
Yeah.
Yeah. And...
I think that's mostly because it has a shake awake thing,
mm-hmm.
but I keep it in my car, so it's probably awake 90% of the time.
I've had that Defender on my SIG since probably beginning of May, and I've never turned it off.
Hmm.
So like it's due for a new battery, but I'll probably replace it, you know, at some point. Anytime it like, because I know the nice part about that sight is you can tell based on your brightness. So like during the day, if I try turning it all the way up and it won't get bright enough, that's when I know it's like, okay, I still have a red dot. I can't see it as well, but it's time to change the battery.
Yeah.
And I've had no change, you know, and it's just on. It's just not much. It's not using a whole lot of power.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, it just, Just kind of depends. Which Holosun do you have on your, is that on your 26?
Yeah, I think it's the 407K, I want to think.
That would make sense, because I think the 407C is for full-size stuff.
Yeah, and there's the 507, which has the multiple reticles,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't really care about that, and this one was a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, the other thing is green or red dot, because some of them you can actually switch between green and red.
Yeah.
And then the reticle shape.
Right.
I don't know how I feel about having, like, because you have, like, a circle with the five slashes on it or four slashes or whatever,
yeah.
then the dot in the center.
I was going to run the 507 on my shotgun, so you have that big circle,
mm-hmm.
and then you can do, the big circle or the big circle with the dot in the middle or just the dot.
Yep.
And for a pistol, it's like, I don't need that big circle.
It's supposed to help find your dot again
right.
after the recoil, but once you shoot with it a couple times, I don't know, like on a carry gun, you never know, God forbid you have to use it. Who knows how you're going to be able to,
right.
how well you're going to be able to find that. But I've shot with my red dot enough to where I feel like I'm pretty good at being able to figure it out. And then your red dot also falls right in line with your iron sights. So worst case scenario, you go to line up your iron sights, your red dot shows up and just you're right there. Like it
yeah.
feels pretty natural to find that dot over and over again. But
yeah, I was going to say the other thing is like practicing drawing and shooting right away. Because that's the whole thing with USPSA and IDPA.
Yep.
You know, a lot of those guys run red dots and they have no problem. You know, they
For
draw
sure.
and they're firing right away.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're sitting there trying to find their dot.
Yeah, then that's a big part of like if like training or whatever. Especially with inside the waistband and especially with having like other layers over top of it. Cause there's a lot of guys that'll train, drawing from like an appendix holster inside the waistband,
mm-hmm.
but then they train with just a t-shirt on. And then if you're walking around in the wintertime with like a big coat on or something like that, it's a lot different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that too, where I try to mix things up. Like last time we shot, I didn't even put my holster on because it was so cold.
No, that's one of the big differences between USPSA and IDPA. IDPA is more of from a concealed position. You have to have some sort of garment covering your gun. That's why a lot of IDPA shooters wear a vest because they can just say that vest is covering their gun.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And it's usually like, you're practicing drawing from appendix position and side waistband. You know.
Yep. Yeah, I could definitely see how that would be beneficial to do that kind of training. But if that's what sucks because, you know, it's not around here.
Yeah. I used to practice like drawing and moving at the same time.
Yeah.
And like even
moving backwards or moving
to the side.
Yep.
Getting the gun out and starting to move and shoot.
It's yep.
way harder than what you think it's going to be.
Yeah,
when I first started, it was like, holy shit. Like
that was a lot of the qualifier stuff that we did for USPSA was starting in the surrender position.
Yeah.
So you would have your back to the targets and your hands above your shoulders, and you'd have to drop your hands down and spin, draw your gun and shoot. So a lot of what happened was people drop their hands down right away and they'd draw as they were spinning and then they'd be whipping that thing up into the air as they were finishing their spin. You got to be careful because you can't break a 180 line.
Right, flag the hole.
When you're doing those competitions, but yeah.
Yeah, that's tricky.
A lot more practical than
mm-hmm.
just drawing and shooting at a target.
Well, and that's the other thing is like you can have somebody who's really good at if they are shooting flat-footed at 7 yards from a target, they might be able to blast the center out of a target no problem. But the second you make them move or draw from a holster or something like that, it's completely different. And we see that even in archery. Like, if I'm standing, you know, on a flat piece of grass, you know, just in a big open field or something like that, and I'm trying to shoot 60 yards. It's a hell of a lot easier than trying to shoot 60 yards aimed up at a hill you know, at a target up on a hill when I have an uneven footing and I have to lean into some sort of a slope to be able to get my bubble right on my boat. I mean, it's a completely different feeling, right? Same kind of concept, like forcing yourself to get into an uncomfortable position to be able to execute something like that. But yeah, it sounds like it would be a good training tool for sure. It just sucks that we don't have anything like that around here right now. Maybe in the future,
I really,
though.
I really want to try to get shooters to start doing that because they have the facility to do it.
Yeah, especially in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
That would be cool.
The other one who might do it is that TCH gear in Interlaken, which is kind of a haul, but I know he was talking about he wants to do a bunch of renovations for like a big indoor gun range because he has a bunch of property over there. So he wants a big indoor gun range and then a big indoor bow range as well. So
I've still never been there.
It's pretty cool. It's really hard because they have a good selection, but they have a limited selection, if that makes sense. So they'll have, like, they had a 336 Marlin that was stamped, John Marlin stamped, when we were there. Yeah.
How much?
Just less than 1,000, but it was, because the 336 is what, 357, I think, is what it was.
336 is like their 30-30, 35 Remington.
It was 35 Remington is what it was.
What are you talking about when you and I were there?
No, when did we go to TCH?
No, I thought you were talking about the Marlin at Shooters.
Oh, no, that was at Shooters.
That was the 357.
That was the 357. Mm. No, I went there with Ethan. What would that have been? Friday, I think?
Yeah, I think you sent me that picture of that BB gun on Friday.
And, yeah, so did that Friday or maybe it was yesterday. I don't remember, but...
Actually, it was yesterday.
We were there.
I was working on my car when you sent me that.
We were there. It was John Marlin stamp, 35 Remington, 336, you know, Gold Trigger, whatever. So they have something like that, but there's one, you know, right. And then they have, like they've got a decent selection of aero parts, but they have like one of each of their different lowers. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
yeah.
if you're looking at something and somebody else buys it and you're kind of like, but they're limited on space there too, because they have a bunch of stuff. They got a bunch of,
like, they got a little bit of everything, but not really like a,
yeah,
you know, right,
exactly. They do have a really, really good Magpul selection. They probably sell every single Magpul product.
Really.
So if Magpul's your thing, which I do like Magpul personally, they have a really. The only thing they didn't sell there was the extended base plates for the Glock mags. So you take a. It's a PMAG 17 for the Glock 17, you know, whatever. And then they have an extended base plate that's 21 plus 1. They had the 21 round magazines, but I want the extended base plate so that it goes flush to the magwell of the gun itself. That way no dirt can get through, like, the bottom. It's just a preference thing.
Yeah.
The way it hangs out of the gun. But regardless, like, it was pretty sweet. And they had a good selection of backpacking stuff, too. Like, they sell backpacking backpacks in there.
Hmm.
Most of the brands I didn't recognize, except for Osprey. They had, I think, at least two Osprey bags in there. I don't remember anything else, like any other brands. But then they had a bunch of Jetboil stuff in there. And they sold the MSR... fuel, but they didn't have any MSR stoves there.
Oh, really?
And then obviously like a bunch of freeze-dried meals or dehydrated meals, but
yeah
I thought it was pretty cool. I like the, like, looking at the backpacking meals versus like the any other like MRE, so to speak. It's just different. They've gotten a lot better.
Whatever you do, don't get the Heather's Choice backpacking meals.
Really?
They're fucking terrible.
All of them?
Are those the blue, white, and orange ones?
No, they're the... I think they're just all white, and then they got little pictures on them or whatever. But they're like 50% more than like your typical one. So I was like, oh, these are going to be really good, and they're supposed to be made with like, you know, really good, you know, food. It's like actually not like a bunch of processed shit or whatever.
Yeah.
And they freaking taste like it. It tastes terrible. I got a bunch of them when we went to Isle Royale, and I still have, I think, 3 or 4 because I just didn't want to eat them.
Yeah.
I still don't want them. I'll give them to you if you want them.
So.
We can bring them on the podcast and I'll try them.
Yeah.
Speaking of backpacking.
They suck.
Well, we said we were going to do an MRE day.
I like the Peak.
Peak
has
brand.
Like the best ones, and that's then the Backpacker's
white,
Pantry.
Yeah,
that's
the
white
Peak
blue
is
and
the
orange.
One with the white blue and orange. Yeah. Yeah. I like their chili mac.
Yeah.
They have a cheesecake one that's really good.
Oh, dude, the Peak
their
breakfast
hot
ones are
breakfast
so good.
One is yeah. pretty good.
Yeah. They have like a biscuits and gravy.
Yeah, sausage.
And
gravy.
It's like
oh,
fucking
yeah,
full
yeah.
biscuits.
Really?
Yeah. Most of them are just
is
like
that a
chunks.
Dehydrated meal?
Yeah.
So you just
they're
add water to it and
yeah.
just, hell yeah. Dude.
Eat them right out of the
that's
pouch.
That's how almost all of those Peak ones are, just dehydrated.
Yeah.
Well, I saw
but
some
they have
of
like
them.
Granola that has like evaporated milk in it.
Yeah.
So you just put a little water in there and it's like milk and granola and like blueberries and stuff. Oh.
I see a couple of them with like specifically fruits and sometimes vegetables. They just do dehydrated.
Yeah.
Or not dehydrated, freeze-dried. And so, and the freeze-dried ones are lighter, like freeze-dried meals are lighter, but the dehydrated ones are smaller.
Yeah.
So it just, it like, whatever. But
you got to watch your servings, too. Some of them are 2 servings, some of them are just 1 serving. And a lot of the 2-serving ones, like, you can eat both servings.
Yeah, but also, like, depending on how
much food,
depending on how much you're hiking, maybe you want those extra calories.
Yeah.
You know?
Me and my dad were kind of planning on, we're like, oh, we got a bunch of, like, 2 servings. And I was like, we'll split some.
Yeah.
And then we got to it, and it's like, yo, we're not splitting this.
Yeah. Yeah. But speaking of backpacking, Jared and I are doing a backpacking trip here in about a month, actually, a little over a month. So that'll be exciting.
Should be a lot of fun. I hope we don't freeze.
I hope so, too.
It might be cold.
The hard part.
Todd and I were talking about that, like, he lived in Colorado. He'd visit Utah to go skiing.
Yeah.
We did our spring break ski trip out in Montana and Idaho. And it was late March when we did that. And there was still lots of snow. We got dumped on in Idaho. Like,
why'd you guys pick that time?
I think that's when Justin's spring break is. It's the first week of March.
Mm. Hmm.
I'm not super concerned about it. The only thing that I'm concerned about is staying dry, because I know, especially when we're moving around, I have a couple pieces of clothing that I know I can wear that's going to keep me warm. It's the staying dry part. And Justin and I talked about, like, if there's not a ton of snow and just kind of wet, just wear gaiters as opposed to trying to find like water, like a waterproof pant. But if there's snow, there's not a whole lot we can do. Like, we're going to be wet regardless if we're trudging through snow while we're
yeah,
trying
I'm
to
also not trudging through snow, so.
Yeah, if you get wet and stay, like, because you can't dry anything out.
I'm not trudging through snow. We can dry stuff out because we're going to have a truck.
Oh, true.
We're like doing day backpacking trips.
Oh, okay.
Around all the different national parks in Utah, yeah, and we're renting a Tacoma. So
we're yeah, still sleeping sure. outside, though.
Yeah.
Which is what I'm excited about. I want to wake up on the side of a mountain. It's going to be cool. And then, like, I'm excited for
have
it because I've never.
Granola and then some coffee.
Yeah.
Side of a mountain.
And I'm excited for it because I've never done anything like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, my camping, I've done like off-grid camping, but it's always been like in the Upper Peninsula
yeah.
where it's pretty much just in the woods. And, like, yeah, we don't have any power and, you know, we're cooking everything on the fire, like coffee in the morning, you know, breakfast, whatever. But it's different when you're, like, on a mountain. Like, that's going to be really fucking cool. Yeah, and I've never seen the mountains.
I've never been to the mountains either, and I really want to go.
So.
I am in love with them.
I love the mountains.
Well, I shouldn't say that. I've seen the Smokies. I've never seen the Rockies.
Yeah, Smokies aren't shit.
Yeah, Smokies are pretty small. It was beautiful, though. Like, I woke up in we were staying in Pigeon Forge, and I woke up one morning right before sunrise. I climbed out of bed, grabbed some coffee, had my hammock out, like set up on the porch of the cabin that we were staying in, overlooking some of the Smokies, like in the woods, tucked away. Grabbed my blanket with my coffee and just sitting there like, hell yeah, dude. This is exactly what I wanted to be doing.
Yeah. I remember doing that. I think it was junior year of high school. We went down to Pigeon Forge, Sevierville area.
Yep.
But
that or the sunset in the hot tub?
It does not compare to when, and maybe yours does, but for me personally, it just doesn't compare to when we did our ski trip and we stayed with some family friends who lived on top of a peak, not of really like a mountain, but it was, they were in the mountains and they were up high. Like they were basically living on top of a mountain.
Yeah.
But they had three different mountain ranges surrounding them.
Yeah.
So you could watch the sun rise on the mountains and you could watch it set on the mountains.
Yeah. That's
and we did. And almost every day, because it was crazy.
For me, that was, I think, the biggest difference. Because I'm, like, looking at some of the pictures online of where we're going out there. When I was in the Smokies, it was, there was a lot of trees surrounding us, right? Like, until you get way high up on the mountains, there's still a lot of trees. But from a lot of those pictures of where we're going, there's not a whole lot of trees. And if they are, they're smaller. They're not like big maples and stuff like that. So
yeah,
I'm super excited for it. And the hard part for me is like I have to decide basically, am I going to pack, because I've got two Kefaru packs, which I don't think I'm going to struggle with hiking around with that backpack because
I would just pack the big one.
So that's what I'm thinking, because all of whitetail season, I walked around with the Manimal. And I did not, I should have weighed it before I switched the Modus on the frame. But if I had to guess, it weighed like 50 pounds, which doesn't really make sense because like my saddle hunting setup shouldn't have been that heavy. But then I also had like a bunch of other random gear. And like I had knives in there and I had
those
like,
little Debbie Christmas trees weigh a
didn't
lot
have
too.
Any of those in there. But I had my knives, like my whole like kill kit in there, basically, rattling antlers, different calls, whatever. Then I had my tree arm. Sometimes I'd have my tripod on there, like just trying to, whatever. So it was super heavy. But I mean, I hiked a couple of times. I would hike like a mile in to go hunting, and you know I was out of breath because I'm out of shape, but my back wasn't hurting me. My legs got very tired because I was climbing a tree, and then I had to, like, especially on the way back out, because you hike a mile in, you climb up this tree. The one time in particular, I didn't bring my stick, so I was actually climbing the tree. Then I had to take all of my gear off of the tree, climb down, and then hike a mile back, and on the way back, my legs were tired.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm definitely, like, I am definitely going to be sore from this trip because I know we're going to do more than a couple of miles a day.
We should do some after work hikes.
We could.
With
yeah.
backpacks and load
but
them up with a little bit of
I'm
stuff.
Thinking I'll bring the Modus because it's double the size of the Manimal and I think I could fit all of my camping gear, like tent, sleeping bag, camp pillow, food, all that crap in the Manimal. But if I bring the Modus, I can put all my clothes in the bottom.
Yeah. And then what you don't need, you can just compress it.
Right, exactly. And so it's like, why not?
The other thing is we're flying and we're taking a truck.
Yeah.
So you can have, I'm bringing carry-on.
So that's why I'm kind of in between it. It's like,
my carry-on's going to have all my clothes, all of my like toiletries and stuff in it. All of that's going in the carry-on. And I'll just grab whatever clothes I need for that hike. Because like I said, yeah. we're doing a day or two at Arches and Zion, Capitol Reef, and you know all of them. But I think there's like five or six national parks in
right.
Utah.
You're not doing a week long.
We're not doing. Get,
yeah,
yeah. So I'm bringing a carry on. It's gonna stay in the truck.
So and I thought about that too because, like, my Manimal is not a whole lot bigger than your backpack that you're using, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar size, but I also have the Cinch, So in the cinch, I could put like my gaiters, if I didn't need them in the morning and then maybe I need them in the afternoon or something like that, my rain jacket, my puffy jacket. There's some still some room in that cinch for stuff that could be like easily accessible, and then just keep the rest of my clothes in some sort of a carry-on. I'm also not going to have a ton of clothes because like we're going for a week, but we're backpack hiking, so like I don't know that I'm going to bring a week's worth of clothes. I'll probably bring like three different pairs of pants, few pairs of socks, some fresh t-shirts and stuff like that, but we're going to be roughing it regardless. Like
the other thing I figured is like I'm probably just going to buy like camp fuel and stuff down there because I don't know about camp fuel on a plane.
You can't fly with it?
Yeah, regulations are hard.
So the nice thing is Justin lives in Memphis and the
Bass Pro Pyramid
is right there.
Did you guys see it was covered with snow?
No.
No, I didn't.
But we can get all of our dehydrated food, all of our camp fuel. If you need water filtration systems, like we can do any shopping like that right there.
Yeah, I want to make sure
that way you're not trying to fly with it.
I want to make sure I'll have my sleep system, as far as like my tent, my mattress pad. I already have a camp pillow that I'm bringing with it. Mm-hmm. I don't think I think I'm going to buy a new sleeping bag because my sleeping bag is pretty big. So I think I'll buy something that compresses a little bit smaller.
The nice thing,
I want to make sure I got that type of stuff figured out, and then like meals and whatnot, you can get that pretty much even in Utah. Even if I waited until we got to Utah, we'd be able to, I'd get that stuff there.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely flying with fuel. I think you'd be okay if it was in your checked bag. You definitely couldn't bring it with your carry-on.
I don't even know if you can do it in your checked bag.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the regulations would be.
But the other nice thing is like, Justin eventually is going to be driving up here at some point. So anything that we buy that is like, if we have leftover fuel, I'm not just giving it to him. He can drive that up to us next time he drives up and we get it all back.
Yeah.
So like even I might buy a better sleeping pad because mine is kind of junk right now. But I need a nice one. I need a nice sleeping pad and then I need a nice sleeping bag because right now the only one that I really have for backpacking is like a 40 degree one.
Yeah, you're gonna want something
it's like
warmer.
A summer bag.
Yeah.
So
well, and quilts are the big thing too. I've been seeing a lot of people talking about camp quilts instead of a sleeping bag.
I have a quilt.
And those things compact like the size of a softball almost. They get real small.
I'd run one in the summer, but I don't know if I'd run one in the winter.
I think I want like a full mummy bag.
Yeah.
But then I have to figure out, like, what temperature do I want it, like, because I probably need something that goes into negative digits. Not that we're going to have negative digits out there necessarily.
But if you want to be comfortable and sleep in your underwear.
Right. Yeah, I don't necessarily want to sleep in full.
Like, I've done the whole camping out ice fishing thing, but I was wearing all of my Carhartt bibs and everything inside that sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Like, I had all of my winter gear on.
I will be buying...
Fucking sleeping in winter gloves.
I will definitely be buying the down boots that you can... They're like slippers.
The little booties.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to buy some of those because my feet get cold really easy.
We kept making fun of one of our buddies for wearing those when we were out at Picture Drocks in the spring. He had those little things. And by the time, like, the second day he put them on, we're like, man, wish we had those.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet.
It was more so just a comfort thing at that point rather than cold. Like, our feet were destroyed.
Yeah, and then I know my feet get cold really easy. So, like, I'm going to make sure I pack, you know, merino socks and keep my feet as dry as possible. And we've talked a little bit about footwear, not so much on the podcast, but, well, we did a little bit last time, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's just
I'm probably just going to wear my Hokas or, I don't know, I could always use some professional development for running shoes to get a new pair of Hokas because mine don't really have much tread on them now. But
the thing is, like, I don't know if I want to go with a shoe or a boot. That's where I'm struggling. And I don't necessarily want to bring both. So
I brought both. I always bring both because when you get to where you're going, when you're just camping, mm-hmm. I take my boots off and throw my shoes on.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Or, my dad brought his Crocs.
Oh, so well, in the
other thing
time,
is
yeah.
you're wearing those little booties, though. So,
yeah, you don't really need
right,
a camp shoe.
Well, so I have my Salomons, those cross hike twos, which have great traction, but not a ton of support. I don't know that I would want to walk 6 miles in those, 10 miles, whatever. But the great thing about those is like they're super lightweight, they're waterproof, they're very comfortable. You know, again, they're not super supportive, so I don't know how they'd last on like a super long hike.
So but my thing is a big hike where you're going a ways away from home and you're committed to doing it for a little while, like a long weekend or whatever.
Yeah.
That is not the time to try out something new. Try out something new when you're doing a day hike closer to home. Because I tried something new when I did Pictured Rocks and it bit me in the ass bad. I've never had a problem with wearing my Hokas or like just whatever your favorite running shoe is or hiking shoe that you, it's your go-to, you know that it's going to work and you're going to be able to hike a few miles in it.
That's what I'm saying. We should do some after work hikes, go, you know, 4 or 5 miles, put some shit in your backpack and see what it feels like.
The problem with that is that the Hokas aren't waterproof.
No, they're not, but I change my socks every day.
So that part, I don't know, because I think I could get away, unless, like I said, unless we're trudging through snow, which you said you don't want to do anyway, that would be the only time where I feel like I would need to have a pair of waterproof boots. Or, you know, because the other thing I've thought about is like, there's a bunch of guys that will do like the hiking, hunting, you know, like backpack hunting trips. Mm-hmm. Crispy goes to the mountains and wears Crispy branded.
Yeah.
I know that sounds confusing, but Crispy boots. And I'm not saying I want to spend $400 on boots, but like, honestly, that's probably a good boot to have for doing out there. The only boot that I have that's well supported and waterproof are my Red Wings, and fuck walking 6 miles in those. It's like carrying cinder blocks on your feet.
The other thing is you would not have good traction, like, because we're going to the, what's the one attraction in Zion where it's like the sweeping, it's got all the lines running through the rock.
Is that the one that Justin texted us about?
No, I think that was Angel's Landing.
Yeah, Angel's Landing. I don't know.
You know, like if you just look up some pictures of Zion, like it's, you'll see it right away. It's red rock with white lines running through it.
It's got like quartz veins through it or something?
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. I think it's called the sweep or something like that. I don't know.
But what you're saying is it's going to be slippery.
It's cool and it's going to be slippery. Yeah, it's very smooth rock. And you're going to be hiking up and down these sweeping rock
I'll see how much room I have. Maybe I'll just bring my Salomons and like a pair of Hokas. And that way, if I feel like I need the really aggressive tread of my Salomons, I can wear those. Or if I want a waterproof shoe / boot thing, because it's kind of like a hybrid, whatever. If I need like a little more ankle support or something, maybe I'll switch to the Salomons.
The other thing is you can stuff a pair of shoes in your carry-on.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I can always
You don't have to have them in your hiking backpack the whole time.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to be like, I'll get with you definitely before the trip and just like talk about the stuff that I need to bring and double check everything, because I think it's going to be really, really easy for me to overpack.
Oh, yeah.
You always do the first one.
We majorly overpacked when I did that 2-week trip out west. Mm-hmm. But the thing is like some days we just literally threw up hammocks on some trees and called it good. Like we'd park on the side of the road and throw up some hammocks.
Yeah.
And my one buddy would usually sleep in the back of the truck. Other times, though, like, we set up an 8-person Four Seasons tent, and I had a cot and a sleeping bag, and, like, we weren't really backpacking camping. We did backpack once, so we had camping for all different types of camping.
Yeah.
That we didn't need. We should have just picked one and ran with it.
Yeah.
Instead, we had our hammocking gear, I had a cot, we had that big-ass tent, we had our backpacking gear.
And that's the only reason why I won't, like.
And then I brought a freaking pillow because we were staying at at one point we were staying in one of my buddies, his uncle's house or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, and plus I was sleeping on a cot, so I'm like, I'm gonna have a pillow.
Well,
I'm gonna bring a cot.
For me, that's the only reason. Like, I have all of the hammock gear to be able to camp. Even I could camp with my hammock in these temperatures with stuff that I already have. And the only reason why I am hesitant to commit to that, the reason I want to bring a tent is because, and like, you know, sleeping pad and all that, is because I'm worried we're going to get out there and there's not going to be any trees to put a hammock on. Or there might be one set of trees, and if we have a couple of guys that are, you know, that need a hammock, then at that point you're like, well, fuck, what now? You know, I guess somebody's sleeping in the truck.
Well, I think it's the type of thing where you in future have better equipped hammock stuff. I think Just and I pretty much just have hammocks. Like, we don't have underquilts. We don't have really a good sleeping pad to put in the hammock. We've got sleeping pads that are meant for tents.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a cover for our hammocks. We don't have any of that stuff. We don't have a rain fly or a bug net or any of that.
I probably, to be honest with you, I probably wouldn't even bring my bug net. If we, like, on this trip, I probably won't even bring it because...
I would, because if you don't bring it, there's going to be bugs.
Yeah, there's probably that too, but...
That's just
I'd be very surprised if it was if there were bugs when it's this cold.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, for me, yes, like you said, I mean, I've got a ProFly tarp from Eno. I've got my double nest hammock. I've got an underquilt. I've got the bug net. But of the, like, from the underquilt, then inside the hammock with me, I would lay my sheep hide in there. So then I've got, like, that warm fur right against me, and I'm not relying on just the underquilt. I've got, like, two types of insulation. Then that's the reason, like, the underquilt creates a pocket of air because you're elevated. So if you don't have an underquilt, all of the air underneath you just gets swept away. And if you have the underquilt, you create this pocket of air that your body heat, your radiant body heat, will warm up that pocket of air and keep you warm from the underside. But then the nylon itself of your hammock can get cold. And so you're laying on, you know, your sleeping bag or a sheep hide or something like that. And then you've got double. But you can't just do a sheep hide or a sleeping bag, because when you're laying on top of it, you compress it and it doesn't have very good insulation. Mm-hmm. So in the summertime it would work, but in any sort of cooler time, even in the summertime, I still run an underquilt because, you know, it can get down to 50 degrees, and when you're used to 75 with 80% humidity, 50 degrees feels cold.
Yeah.
So,
well,
it gets tricky.
We've done some pretty fun camping too. Like the one night we were in, I think we were in really far west Colorado or just getting to Utah, something like that, like passing through Wyoming. But we stayed the night and I literally just set up my hammock under some trees. Or no, it was my cot. I set up my cot under some trees. Everyone else had their hammocks and whatnot. And we just all slept right out in the open.
Yep.
Same thing, like, when we were in Badlands, we hiked down through a dried river and then up on top of one of those mounds and set up a sleeping pad and our sleeping bag. That was it. Like, no hammock, no tent, nothing, right? Yep. I think the roughest one I did was out in Manitou Island. We went out, did some not-so-allowed stuff. You're supposed to only camp at the campsites, but we hiked out onto the dunes and slept out on the dunes.
No.
And it was like we brought just our sleeping bags. That was it. No pillows, nothing. We just...
like, mold the sand to your body?
Yeah, pretty much. And the sand was cold.
Ooh, yeah. At night, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was cold out there.
So, I mean, that's, I don't know. A tent is kind of like a fail-safe. With the only downside of a tent is if you can't find somewhere flat to set it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you then if you have trees around, then that's where a hammock really shines, is because you can get yourself to sleep a lot more level.
Well, but I kind of want to go through. The other nice thing is, like, we don't just have to go around all these different national parks. We can do other stuff, too. I really want to go through Dixie National Forest because it's kind of already on the way to some of the other national parks.
Yeah.
And it's, like, one of the few spots in Utah. It's, like, a huge pine tree forest.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because it's on some canyons and cliffs and stuff.
Yeah. So for that, like, my hammock setup probably weighs a pound. It's not very heavy. Maybe 2 pounds. The rain fly is the heaviest part of it. I might just bring my hammock stuff and a tent, and like just bring both. And,
I would.
And just
I
kind of whichever one is, it makes more sense, you know, great. The hard part with a hammock, even with the rain fly, is like if it's windy and there's snow around and it's blowing snow, you're going to be miserable in a fucking hammock because you'd have to pull your rain fly. You'd have to set it low, which sucks because you have to have a, I forget what the line is called that you hang right above. But basically, I have a piece of cordage that I hang the top of my bug net from because it's not connected to my hammock all the time. And I would basically have to not run my bug net and run my rain fly like right above my hammock and pull the sides down really far so that I was fully insulated from the elements with my rain fly, or just sleep in a tent. Because in a tent, you have all of that protection from the wind. Ideally. I mean, you don't really know, but in a perfect world, it would protect you. So, those are those socks. Darn tough wool socks.
I love these socks.
Are those merino wool?
Yeah.
Those are thin, too. Those are nice.
They're thick. They're thicker than... I have some other thinner ones.
They're thicker than... maybe like a normal cotton sock, but they're compared to like my wool socks.
They make a bunch of different ones. They make running wool socks. They make hiking wool socks. They make everyday wool socks. They make like hunting super thick wool socks. I got Brooke a bunch of different pairs for the army and whatnot.
Yeah, nice. I have a pair that I wear in the summertime.
She's allowed to wear her own socks?
I don't know if she really is or not, but I think they just don't really check.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good socks. Because I know she has, like, the army issued green socks that suck.
Yeah.
But.
That would be the hard thing, too. Like, you get to basic, and you're like, hey, congratulations, guys. Like, we're doing 15 miles today. And you're wearing, like, shitty socks. You get a blister. And the next day, they're like, yeah, we're doing another 15 miles. You're like, fuck.
Yeah, it's meant to break you.
Yeah. And that would suck, dude. Like, if something as stupid as a blister, like, you'd be battling that all day on top of being, you know, having sore legs and being dehydrated. And
yeah. And the other thing is like, if you get injured, it's not like it's okay, we'll work with you until you're healed again. It's like, nope, you just get kicked out until you heal, and then you got to go redo it all again.
Yep. Yep. That's tough.
So, like, she got to the very end, and she fractured her hip, like, stress fracture from hiking so much. And just didn't do anything about it because she would have had to restart all of basic.
That was sucks.
Same thing, like, even after basic, it's not like, okay, we're in the clear, now I can go deal with this. It's like, you get to AIT, and if she tells them, oh, yeah, I've got a fractured hip, they're going to be like, okay, well, you're getting recycled.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks. It's definitely going to be fun, though. Like, I'm excited for the camping part, and I'm excited for the cooking part and seeing all the views and everything. Like, it's going to be a cool experience for sure. Very, like I said, very different from pretty much anything I've done. So, yeah.
I love those meals, dehydrated meals.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my parents to commit to that. The hard part is, like, my dad right now, especially, like, he needs his knee replaced, so he can't hike like that. Like, the furthest that I remember doing on a family hiking trip was 5 miles, and that was rough. You know, like, everybody was bitching because it was long and tiring and hard and like that.
Oh, yeah. I don't think my family would be able to do any of this stuff.
Well, your brother.
Like, he's my brother is about the only one.
Yeah.
My dad, he can do it, but he doesn't like doing it.
That's the other thing. I don't think my dad would see the appeal in it. Like, even if he had a brand new knee and he was, like, his knee was fine, I still think he'd be like, yeah, fuck that, dude. Like, there's, you know, he enjoys camping, but it's not like backpack camping. Like, he can rough it. Like, he'll cook over the fire and, like, you know, we're sleeping without electricity or whatever, but he still wants to have, like, okay, I'm still going to have a tent set up on flat ground, and like they still have an air mattress that they blow up, and like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's bougie tent camping. Not like a camper. My parents we've never been camper people.
Right.
But still, like, as far as tent camping goes, it's pretty bougie most of the time.
Yeah, I think that's the other problem is my parents consider their fifth wheel camping. So, and it's like people freaking live out of those things.
Yeah.
It's got a spot for a washer and a dryer.
They do live out of it, though, in the summertime. They spend all their time at the campground.
Yeah, but it's really just weekends. They don't live up there
week. Oh, I thought they were staying all week.
Yeah. They will do long weeks there, like over 4th of July and whatnot. They'll do long weeks, but...
Yeah. Well, it's hard, too, because you've got all the responsibilities of your other house, you know, basically. So yeah. It's tough to leave that. Plus, like, if you were to stay there all summer, then you got to bring, like, a bunch of clothes and, you know, there's like... Yeah.
Yep.
That part would suck. But it's still fun. You know, different from
super fun
being, you know, just I remember being a little kid, like camping in the backyard and shit. And that was like the coolest. Set up a tent and cook food, you know, cook dinner over the campfire. Like we're cooking hot dogs and roast marshmallows. Yeah. And
I used
shit.
To do that with my buddies. We'd set up in the backyard.
Yeah. That was fun. Mm-hmm. I did that a few times actually. There's a story. I wish my dad was here to tell it, but I was really little, like 3 or 4. And I don't remember. It had to have been summertime. But we used to live, like, I don't know, probably 15 miles or so north of here. And it was right in the cedar swamp. So mosquitoes were always, like, real bad. But we were just begging my parents, like, we want to camp, we want to camp. And they're like, well, you know, let's just set up the tent in the backyard and, like, we'll camp. You know, that way, if everybody's fucking miserable, we just go in the house. Like, it's no big deal. Because, like I said, my brother and I, if I was 3 or 4, my brother was 2 or 3. Like, he was little. But it's probably 9 o'clock at night, and, you know, my mom gets us all to bed, and she's, like, you know, getting us situated in the tent, and my dad's sitting out at the fire with the dog, and you just see this silhouette. My dad's sitting in like a old school camp chair, like one of the cheap ones, you know, and it had sat outside for a long time, so it was like all sun faded or whatever, and he fell right through the center of it. like I don't know, I guess what you would call that, but like his knees came to his chest, his ass went to the floor. So he starts hysterically laughing as my mom's like trying to get the kids to bed or whatever. So she whips open the tent door and she's like, what is so funny? And she sees my dad sitting there like all, you know, the chairs ripped up and everything like that. Just a funny experience. Like, of course, you know, if, right. Like, if it's going to happen, better to happen in your backyard than, you know, away from home. So, yeah, I don't know. I want to do some backpacking or, like, I would love to do a long weekend around here, like, even this time of year. Like, I don't care about, you know, sleeping in the cold and whatnot. It would be cool to have, like, a hot tent or something, but it's not really that cold where you would need it. Mm-hmm. If it was consistently, like, negative temperatures, yeah, you'd probably want to have a hot tent. But you could go do, if it was, like, 20s and 30s, you could do a weekend and you'd be fine.
I've seen, have you seen the YouTube channel Outdoor Boys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He'll do like wild outdoor camping. No,
in Alaska.
Yeah, in Alaska. He'll just build like a lean to out of logs and tend to a fire all night to stay warm.
Mm-hmm. That's where I got the idea of like sleeping on the hides and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Cause I wanted the sheep hide because, I was actually at Jake's house, and downstairs they've got sheep hides on the couches. So you, like, sit around the fireplace, and it's a leather couch. But, you know, leather gets cold in the wintertime, so then you get to sleep on the sheep hide, like, if you're staying there or sit on it. And it's just, like, just a cozy feeling.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I want to do that. And normally just stays like in my office chair. So if I'm playing Xbox or something, like it's just cozy.
Right. My uncle's got buffalo hides they use for blankets.
Yeah, that's what this guy, he sleeps with buffalo hides or caribou hides.
It's so warm.
Yeah.
But you know what's crazy? So I was looking on eBay. I was like, oh, I'll buy a buffalo hide. Like, hell yeah. First of all, a nice buffalo hide is like $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of the time, they get used as a rug. And I'm like, dude, I don't want to sleep with something that people have been walking over with their sweaty, nasty feet. You know what I'm saying? And you're still paying $700 for the thing.
Yeah.
And you can tell, like, they've walked on it a lot because half of the hair's, like, missing from it. You can see the hide through it. And I'm like, no, fuck that. I'd rather just, like, I don't know, shoot my own something like that, you know? Like, it's crazy, though, because you don't think about, like, nowadays, you don't think about furs being profitable.
Right.
You know, because you shoot a coyote, okay, what's a coyote hide worth? Well, after you taxiderm it and pay the taxidermist $100 to tan the thing, it's worth $40.
It's way more than $100 to tan them.
Right, exactly. But still, they're worth like 40.
Yeah.
You might get $100 for it in the right market. But
we had a guy come back and do, he would trap and do furs and whatnot. He was one of the guys that worked on the farm near our house.
Was he tanning them himself, though?
No, I think he was just selling the hides.
Oh, okay.
Like the carcass hide.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can sell them in different stages.
He would do he'd do coyotes. He'd do beavers.
I really want a beaver pelt.
Yeah.
It's so soft.
Yeah,
beaver belly. Mm-hmm. That's like... So if you get a 100X cowboy hat, that's what it's made out of, is beaver belly felt. Yeah. And then anything above 100X, if you get to like 1,000X, is 100% mink. Mm. So over 100X, they start mixing in mink. Like a 500X is mostly beaver belly with like a lot of mink in there as well. You know, it's like 70-30 or something like that.
Well, that's why that hat was so expensive. It's only a 7X, but it's beaver.
Mm.
Yeah, is it 7X as in like it's 7% beaver felt, or
no.
7X like it's
like the roughness of the hat?
Yeah. So there's a lot of like just, they're fucking crazy.
Yeah. America's first millionaires were made from the beaver market.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that would make sense because before Rockefeller traders and everything.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Craziness. That, I mean, could you imagine, though, if we were still able to make a living off of being able to, like, sell hides and stuff like that?
It'd be pretty cool.
Like, I shot 3 deer this year, and imagine I was able to just, like, oh, yeah, I got 3 hides to be able to sell. Or, like, hey, Mom, you need a new blanket. Don't worry, I got you. I got 3 deer hides right here.
Yeah.
Make a pair of buckskin moccasins. That'd be kind of cool, actually.
Yeah. It's expensive now to get them tanned.
It's expensive for any sort of taxidermy.
Mm-hmm.
Like shoulder mount now, good luck finding it for less than $700.
Yeah.
A cheap one, $700. Most of the time you're paying damn near $1,200 for a shoulder mount.
Yeah.
If you want it done right. It sucks. And it, like, don't get me wrong, I don't want to take away from the taxidermist, because I've met some taxidermists, like the guy that did my brother's deer, that's like true artist.
Oh yeah.
Like he did a really, really good job.
It's a fuck ton
of
work.
Oh, that too. But it's just like, damn, what a kick in the nuts. That's expensive.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like Mike's taxidermy over in Fife Lake.
Yeah.
He does a really good job.
But he only lets a certain people bring him deer, right?
Well, before it was kind of anyone.
Yeah, it's kind of semi-retired right now, I think.
Before it was kind of anyone. And then he's semi-retired like the year that I got that, 2020, I think. And he ended up this year, he was like, this is my last year I'm doing it. Everyone's last chance. And he said he was only taking 75 customers, and I think he still took like 180.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks.
Well, it's just, he's so good at what he does, and everyone wants him.
Yeah.
And it was the type of deal, like he canceled his phone number and everything, like his business phone number, all that. I don't know if he had a website or not, but he like he basically removed everything. It was he was only taking people that knew his personal cell number.
Yeah.
He still got like 180.
Yeah, he was when I
and it's a dying trade too.
In 2017 when I got my bear, he was like, "Yeah, I'm pretty much done."
Who ended up doing your bear?
He did.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, he did I think I have a few things that he did. I know my dad.
He do that 8-point?
No.
You get that smaller 8-point, you know which one I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, he did that one.
Yeah.
The one on the right.
Okay.
He did that one. And then he did my bear. I feel like he did something else, but it might be.
And then what the deer you shot a couple of years ago was a 7 or a 9?
No, it was an 8.
Was it an 8?
Mm-hmm. Now and I just European mounted. But he didn't do that.
Yeah, I wish I'd have shot something like that, man. It's one of my big goals this year. We're putting a bet up on the
Instagram.
Supposed
to have my 8-point done here pretty soon, so I'll get that done.
Sweet.
Piece of aluminum routed and painted.
We're putting a poll up on the Instagram page. What's more likely to happen in 2025? Nick shoots a big buck or Nick gets a girlfriend? that's the bet.
Or C, neither.
I know which one you're working on more.
Well, yeah. In the fall time, I spent a lot of time on both of them and struck out both times. So, you know, is what it is, I guess. But, yeah. On a different note, back to our cool shit. You got Blue Jay tattooed on your arm.
I do.
And the other day, you sent me a video of a hawk eating a Blue Jay. Or at least attacking a Blue Jay.
Oh, no, it was eating it.
Yeah. Well, the thing's still alive, too. Yeah.
Has your time come, Justin? This is a sign.
Maybe. Well, the problem is I got a hawk and a blue jay tattoo.
Oh, I didn't know you had a hawk. Yeah, it's covered up. Oh, it's a stupid-looking hawk. No, I'm just kidding.
It's a good thing it's on me.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But that's I would have never expected something like that. I wouldn't think that a hawk would go after another bird.
I didn't think so either.
But if
especially
he's like
a
hungry,
blue jay,
hungry.
Like he must be struggling out there. That was in my parents. My dad sent me that. He was,
If you want to check it out, we're going to post it on the Knox and Nature Instagram page, Knox and Nature_podcast. If you want to see that,
see if it gets taken down.
I don't think
it shouldn't get taken down.
Shouldn't.
On Instagram.
I mean, like if Instagram posts people getting hit by cars. So
yeah, there might be a graphic warning thing on it. If it was TikTok, it'd definitely get taken down. But
I doubt it because you can't see much. I mean, it's not. I don't know.
It is an interesting video, though.
Yeah,
I think
cool.
I think it's kind of amazing that was in their front yard. I would have just thought, you know, hawk would have been going after a mouse or a squirrel or something. I would have much more expected a squirrel way more than I would have a blue jay. Like, how do you even catch a blue jay?
Right.
Because a hawk can fly as well, but blue jay's pretty fast, you know.
He probably wasn't expecting it.
That too, yeah. Swoop in and just...
Yeah, he's like, hey, what's up, buddy? What the...
Or rabbits, dude. Rabbits are shifty.
Oh, yeah.
But, I don't know.
Hawks get rabbits a lot.
You want to talk about some soft fur, dude. Rabbit fur is real soft.
I've only shot one rabbit in my life, and I wish I would have kept that.
I haven't shot any, but...
I got one with my recurve. I
had a lot of... Actually, that's not true. I've shot rabbits when I was younger, but I think I've told that story before. When I was like, "Hey, mom, can I go shoot a rabbit?" She was like, "Sure, get out of my hair." And I had my bow, and I was like, "Hey, mom, look at this rabbit I shot." And she was like, "What the fuck are you doing? Go get rid of that," you know. But I've never gone out with my shotgun or a .22 and tried to get a rabbit. I guarantee you. The hard part is most of the time you see them in the summer because they're gray and everything's green. But even now, I bet I could get one with my pellet gun in the backyard. I don't know legally. I'm technically not in village limits, but there's houses around where I'm at. But then I'm also using an air gun. So an air gun's not considered a firearm, but you are legally allowed to hunt with, there's a gray area there. We need to get a DNR officer. Answer all of our questions on gray area shit, but yeah, man, whatever.
I've never had any luck rabbit hunting. I did have one time though. There was bunch of baby rabbits, like little bunnies, running around, and they were brown. They were the cutest things ever, and like you could walk up and pick them up.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it was cool.
And they're soft as
they're
shit.
They're so soft. Yeah.
Yeah, I ran over a rabbit nest with a lawnmower one time when I was doing landscaping.
That's gruesome.
No, they didn't die. They didn't die because we were cutting the grass at 3 inches, mm-hmm. and the rabbit nest is like down below. And so I did. I called the DNR, and they, because I was like, hey, like, you know, is there any, like, this is in somebody's front lawn. There was quite a few. There's like 6 or 8 rabbits there.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. And, if you ever find a rabbit's nest and like it's open,
yeah,
they're freaking everywhere.
And so I called them and I was like, hey, like, is there anything we can do about this? Like, you know, can I, because I knew you weren't supposed to handle them. And so I'm like, is there anything I can do to like, can I relocate them to a different area? Like, do you guys want to come get them or whatever? And the officer, I don't remember who it was, but like, he was basically like, yeah, you know, like, you're doing kind of like a good Samaritan thing, like trying to take care of this, but it's a wild animal. Like, you can't really do anything with it. The one of them I thought was dead, the one I thought was dead, and I did end up picking it up. Because I was gonna like go toss it off the side of the yard, so it wasn't it was just a like baby rabbit, like probably just born type deal, just barely had fur basically. But it was laying in the middle of the yard, and I thought like, oh, I hit, that was one that I hit with the lawnmower, like it probably is dead or whatever. So I was gonna, instead of leaving it in the middle of the customer's yard, I was gonna throw it like off to the side, like in their woods or whatever. And I picked it up and it started moving. And so I just put it back down, like, with the rest of the nest or whatever. But, yeah, that thing was, the rabbits are super soft. And I've had, through, like, the leather work and stuff, I've tried to work with rabbit fur and whatnot. And it's,
yeah.
I was going to, I bought a pre-made kit to make moccasins. And I was going to line it with rabbit fur, and I never finished the project. But, yeah, the rabbit fur is really soft.
Mm-hmm. I think we should try some taxidermy. We go shoot some squirrels and make squirrel koozies.
Oh, yeah.
Some koozies.
So I have skinned squirrels so it's kind of funny. A couple years ago, I want to say it was like Thanksgiving, because I know it was holidays, but I don't think it was Christmas. My uncle was up and mentioned that one of his buddies did taxidermy, and that was like his thing was squirrels. He was doing a display of squirrels in funny poses. So like, I think it was you. You have the squirrel that's shooting the bow, or did you? Maybe you sent me a picture of it. You know what I'm talking about, where they put squirrels in funny poses. Yeah. Like, they'll dress a squirrel up like Robin Hood, where he's shooting a bow. That's a popular one. So he was doing stuff like that. Like the one that he already had done was a squirrel like barbecuing on a grill, and wearing like an apron and everything, like the chef's hat, like funny shit.
Yeah.
And so, my uncle was over for one of the for Thanksgiving. And there's this big fox squirrel that I had shot. And he was like, hey, like, you know, what are you going to do with that? And I was like, probably feed it to, you know, the barn cats next door, or the coyotes can eat it or whatever. Like, because squirrels are just a nuisance in our neighborhood. They just eat everything, especially fox squirrels and red squirrels. And he's like, well, you should skin it and, like, whatever. So I skinned it, and it was big. It was, like, the size of a house cat. It was fucking huge for a squirrel. But yeah, like, I got down with an X-Acto knife on the legs to like cut that apart, pull the feet out and everything like that. You gotta be really careful on the head with their nose and everything, because everything's super small up there. Yeah. But skinned the thing out entirely, and off it went to the taxidermist. Like, remember the fox squirrel we saw at Shooters?
Mm-hmm.
The one I shot was probably about that size, big ass squirrel.
Yeah.
So I've done that, but I've never tried fleshing anything or the actual tanning process, mostly because it's so freaking messy. Like, we would need an area to do it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it at my parents' house. My parents got pissed when my brother and I were doing our European mounts, because, first of all, whatever pot you do it in, you cannot use anymore, because it's nasty.
Yeah.
And then when you're actually boiling deer heads, it smells like boiling deer heads, and so it... You know, and we were doing it in springtime. So at the time, I think they had like the windows open and shit. My brother and I are boiling deer heads on the fire in the backyard. And they're like, what are you doing? This is not, But yeah, then you have to invest some time into it to really like figure that out. I've wanted to do it. Like I've thought about shooting a doe eventually, not now, but like eventually when I got my own space, like a pole barn or something to work out of, shoot a doe, get a whitetail form and like learn how to do taxidermy on some does. Just as like practice, because that way when you get a nice buck that you want to taxidermy, you've got the ability to do it. If you fuck up a doe mount, like nobody really cares about shoulder mounted doe, but it'd be good practice.
It would be funny to have a bunch of fucked up looking does.
It would be, kind of, and then you got like one buck in the center of like 10 fucked up looking doe mounts, yeah. And you're like the Chad, and then all of his hoes, you know. That would be kind of funny, actually, but I don't know. I love when they do, like, the guy that did my brother's deer made a doorbell for somebody's hunting cabin that was the butthole. They have, like, the butt mount that you can do for the does,
mm-hmm.
or for deer in general. And so he did that mount, and then they cut a hole in it and, like, fed the cord with the button and whatever, put it underneath the hide and, like, glued it to it. So you had to press the butthole of the deer to ring the doorbell.
Yeah, my grandpa's got one of those that had a bottle opener in it.
Nice. Yeah.
And then he's also got a bear ass.
That's funny.
You want to see my bear ass?
That's funny. Huh. That's funny. That and like any type of fucked up taxidermy or a weird animal, you know, like, you know, what is that? Oh, it's a platypus. It's in your hunting cabin in northern Michigan. You got to have something weird in there, and then you got to have a real fireplace. And then everything's just like flannel, or you get a couch that looks like the one Jared's sitting on. Like, that's hunting cabin-esque right there. Yeah. You know?
Yep.
Bunch of Mountain Dew and Bush Light cans over here. Bunch more in the fridge. You know? That's what it is. All that ambiance.
Yep.
Your family cabin, is that like your dad and your uncle, or is that
for hunting camp?
Yeah. So are you going to take, like, are you going to inherit that when they're? Mm-hmm.
It's my parents own it with my uncle right now. They just inherited it from my mom's aunts. I think it's my mom. Yeah.
Does your uncle have any kids?
Mm-mm.
No.
He has one that, like a stepkid.
But not into hunting.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a hunting cabin per se. It's just a...
But it's a cabin.
Yeah. We use it for deer camp, but it's mostly just a vacation spot that everyone uses.
It's cool, though.
It's super cool.
Is it log, like a log cabin type deal?
No, it's got cedar shakes on it right now.
Oh, that's still cool, though.
Yeah. We should go up there for a weekend or something. It's pretty fun.
It'd be cool to
walk around.
Jake's trying to get me up to his cabin in Paradise, because nobody, like in his family, nobody really uses it since his grandpa passed. Mm. He's like, you know, we've got this cool spot to like go camp and fuck around or whatever. Like, we should go do it. It's like, yeah, it's just a hard time commitment. It'd be a little bit easier now with my more consistent hours and everything, but, you know, up to Paradise is a haul.
Yeah,
and especially this time of year, it's like you. You'd really want to leave like Thursday night, ideally have like a Friday off, you know what I'm saying? Or leave like really early Friday so you didn't have to drive completely in the dark. And then you could pretty much spend Saturday there. You got to pack shit up, drive home Sunday because you don't want to spend the entire drive in the dark back.
Mm-hmm. That's what's nice about ours. It's only an hour and a half away.
Yeah, so there's that too.
It's like far enough to like not
be
home.
Well, Paradise is probably, I bet it's about like the Sioux. So you're maybe two and a half hours from here. I don't know. What's the Sioux from? The Sioux from St. Ignace is probably an hour. 45 minutes to an hour.
If that.
Yeah, 45 minutes to an hour.
Not far at all.
And Paradise is just basically, instead of northeast, it's more north. So I bet it's probably about 2.5 hours to Paradise. It's not Whitefish Bay Paradise. It's his cabin somewhere in there. But,
oh, yeah.
So it's not, like, crazy far. You know, you're not driving to Ironwood. But still, kind of, like, a little bit further than what I'd want to do right now. And that's completely off the grid. So no power and most of the time no cell reception. Yeah. So it's in the wintertime, it's like that part sucks because I can't even really take a shower because I'd have to shower outside with like a boiling pot of water. Like that part kind of sucks.
Right.
In the summertime, wouldn't be that bad because it's not that cold out, but in the wintertime. Oh, I got icicles hanging off my nipples, dude. Is what it is. But, yeah. What do you think's your favorite camping memory, Jared?
Oh, I don't know. I go camping so much. That's like, it's hard to pick a favorite. As far as
there's
like,
nothing that stands out like this was the coolest thing.
I mean, like, the first time I went backpacking was really cool.
Yeah. There's,
I'd
I guess,
never
like,
done it before. I thought it was pretty sweet. Yeah, I don't know, because, like, it depends on what you want to define as camping, because I've been doing fifth wheel camping at a permanent site since I was, like, 5 years old.
Well, and that's where I was thinking about, like, my experience at the cabin, but in Pigeon Forge, but that wasn't really camping. We were just staying at a cabin.
But then I've also been doing, like, backyard camping and tent camping. I've done that before quite a bit when I was younger. Then got into backpacking and did some car camping out west. I mean, like, favorite memory, I think, is probably when I was camping up in a lake in the mountains in Boulder, Colorado.
That would be cool.
That was just mainly for the views.
Is that where you saw the moose, too?
No, that was in Rocky Mountain National Park.
Oh, gotcha.
But kind of between Grand Junction and Boulder.
What about you, Justin? You got a favorite camping memory?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, my first backpacking. Like, I used to go backpacking with my dad when I was a kid. That was really fun.
But like, I'm surprised Isle Royale wasn't, like, up there.
It's definitely up there. But, like, also, like, it depends on, like, yeah, like, what kind of camping. Because, like, I used to go camping with my grandma for a week or two every summer over in Interlaken at, like, the state park over there.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice state park.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't be in the state park. We'd be on, like, the rustic side.
Oh, nice.
And then, but we'd always bring, like, I could bring a friend. And so it'd be, like, me and a buddy would go there. We'd bring our bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And
go over to the state park,
go over
swimming.
To the state park, you'd go swimming.
Yep.
They had, like, the arcade. They
had
their
camp store's cool.
Yeah, they had the Interlaken Center for the Arts that you could go get, like, super cheap ice cream at.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just
cruise. Or go see a show if you're into that.
Yeah,
which I would have been, but
no, we used to just like go hang out in like the basement bathrooms there. Cause, like,
yeah, okay,
you know, whatever.
Fucking weirdo.
Yeah, it was fun. It's just hanging out with your friends. But
I mean, like, I can't really say anything. My buddies and I used to drive to Frankfurt for fun. So
yeah, so I mean, that was just a lot of fun of, you know, good childhood summertime memories.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, once I got kind of hooked on the backpacking thing, that was a whole new adventure.
And you saw a moose at Isle Royale.
Yeah, it was pretty far away, but yeah, we did.
I've never seen a bull elk in person, a wild bull elk in person. I've seen a cow over in, over towards Atlanta on the side of the road. But I've never seen a bull elk in the wild in person before because I've seen them in multiple different pens, whatever. There's that one towards Central Lake. On M88, and then
my brother almost hit one in Idaho.
Really?
Yeah, we were coming.
But that's
back
my
from
big. I want to see one on this trip. I'm hoping we see.
I don't know if we're gonna see elk in around that part of Utah. Would we?
Oh,
depends on what we're going all over Utah. There's definitely elk in Utah.
Okay, but you know it was hilarious because we were. It was my buddy's car because this was our ski trip. And we had just gone to a hot spring up in the mountains, and we all drank, and he stayed sober. That way, we would have a driver.
Yeah.
And on the way down the mountain, like it was covered in ice, so at one point the car just shifted sideways and started sliding sideways down the mountain, and we're like, "Whoa, what is going on?" We're like, "Correct it now, because this thing's gonna roll over. It's got, you know."
Yeah.
600 pounds of skis up on the roof because we all brought like two or three pairs of skis because we're like, oh, we don't know what kind of riding we're going to do. Might as well bring them all if they all fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was scary. And then once we get down off the mountain, we're heading back to the hotel. And I think we're maybe like an hour away from the hotel. And it just turned into an absolute blizzard snowstorm. And a freaking elk ran out in front of him while we were driving. And he slams on the brakes, manages not to hit it. And then he just sits there and he's like, I'm done driving. Someone else drive.
I honestly probably would have done the same thing. So when I saw that, when we saw that cow on the side of the road, I was with Alan in the big truck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just sitting on the side of the road. Like, didn't run out in front of us or whatever. But immediately I was like, you know, against your average whitetail that's going to run in front of you, like a 90-pound doe, even like a small buck, that truck's probably fine. Like, it's got a steel bumper, probably mess up the grill or whatever. Against a 700-pound cow, I don't think there's much you're going to do. It's going to fuck everything up on its way in.
Yep. That's like moose, if you hit a moose or a horse.
Oh, they just fall over onto the top of your car. Yeah, especially if you're in a car.
They just roll
across
the car and flatten it.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a video, I want to say it was in Italy. The only reason I say this is because the guy was driving a sports car, but he's like coming around all these curves, whatever, and they show this angle where he's coming around and this wild horse or a loose horse, whatever, comes out in front of him, and he like stuffs the brakes, whatever, tries not to hit it, hits its legs, thing falls on top of its hood in the windshield, horse just gets up and he's like, fuck you, dude, takes off running again. It's like, all right, like, good news is you didn't have to move a dead horse out of the road.
Right.
Bad news is your car's totaled.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, we saw lots of elk driving around through Montana.
Montana Idaho. Doesn't surprise me at all. Mm-hmm.
Idaho had a ton. Yeah. Wyoming.
Yeah, Wyoming. That would make sense.
Yeah.
Idaho apparently is some of the toughest elk hunting that can happen.
We were in,
because I talked to Jake's stepdad and he was like, he's like, the way that you hunt elk there is very different from how you'd hunt it in Colorado. He's like, Colorado, you're gonna spot the thing from 2 miles away across a valley, and you're gonna go down into that valley and then climb up another ridge to go get to your elk. He's like, in Idaho, he's like, we don't even bugle, we would cow call, and the things are so thick, he's like, you don't need to shoot 80 yards. He's like, because if you have an opportunity at a bull, it's going to be within 30, most of the time within 20. Like he said, like a very common range for people to shoot their elk, like a bull elk in Idaho when he was guiding out there, was 12 yards. And I'm like, dude, you could give me a longbow and I'd be able to put a lethal shot on a bull elk at 12 yards.
That's where a lot of the trad guys go, is Idaho.
Yeah, well, that would make sense. If that's the type of hunting that happens, it's like, okay, if I have an opportunity, it's going to be in range. Versus, like, you could be in Utah, Colorado, even Montana, New Mexico, and you could spot a bull elk from, you know, 1,700 yards, and you can hike up to it to within 80 yards, and maybe you can shoot 80. Maybe you get within 40, but you might never get an opportunity at that deer. It's in range, but you don't really have an opportunity. Well, with a bow, right? Yeah. If you had a rifle, you could, there was a 12-year-old on YouTube that dropped a bull from 1,400 yards, but.
Right. At that point, you're just shooting.
Kid's a great shot.
Yeah.
But, like, I personally, if I'm going to shoot an elk, I want to be within bow range. Even if I'm shooting it with a rifle, I'd like to be with under 100 yards.
Right.
I think we also saw elk in California and Oregon.
Northern California?
Yeah. Way, way far north.
Yeah, that would make sense, too.
Los Angeles.
You probably, in Oregon, did you see any, did you see any blacktail in Oregon?
No, I wasn't really paying attention.
Blacktail, big popular. Or mule deer. I've never seen a mule deer
all
either.
Through the night in Oregon, like drove all through the night, and then we went riding around on sand dunes the next day. So.
Oh, okay.
But, no, in Idaho, we were going through, like, northern Idaho, where it's all really steep mountains and really thick forests and, like, temperate rainforest or whatever. No, I don't know temperate, but it's technically like rainforest, I'm pretty sure. Kind of like Washington.
The I read something that the only actual rainforest climate in North America is the Smoky Mountains. So like the state of Washington and even Alaska, like they talk about like
Washington,
the Alaskan rainforest.
Yeah.
But apparently that's not, and I don't know, I don't remember where, this was a long time ago I was reading this, but apparently those don't technically qualify as a rainforest, but the Smokies do, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Yeah.
That's wild.
But like it was cool going through Idaho because we were driving along a river through a mountain pass, and it was cool because we went way up into this mountain pass and then way down. On the way down, we're following along this river the whole time, and it was gorgeous river, gorgeous place to drive through too. And it was cool because all the houses were across the river. Like, no one wanted to build near the road. They're like, and they're also 700 miles away from the nearest gas station or grocery store or whatever.
Wow.
Like, or not 700, but it was...
I was like, damn, that's crazy.
700 miles, yeah.
Yeah. Probably, but more like 250. But it was a long ways away. Like, we had to use gas cans.
Wow. No shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it was really cool. All of the houses, they're built across the river, and there would just be, like, a little gravel pull-off next to the road, and then there'd be a gondola go across the river to your house.
Oh,
damn. Or not a gondola, like a cable car.
Yeah, yeah, like a ferry. That to take you across the river?
No, it was a cable car, like you would up in the air.
Oh, not like, okay.
Like a cable car, yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, because we did one when we went to Mammoth Cave. There was like a ferry, like an automated ferry.
These are all everyone's like personal, like private property.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, so everyone's just building a bunch of cable cars to go. Get to their
$1 million
house that's stashed out in the woods away from all other civilization. I'm like, I could live out here.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet.
We're driving down this road in Kentucky, and when we went to Mammoth Cave, and the road signs kept saying, road ends in water. My dad's like, what the fuck? Like, where are we going right now? You know? And we get to this river, and it was like a river, not like something around here.
Not
but like
the Boardman?
No, it was probably, I don't know, 50 yards across. Like, it was significant. Wow. I wouldn't want to try to swim across it. And there was this little ferry that was, like, automated. It just went, and then go, like, wait for a second, whatever. And then it'd, like, close off and be like, don't load, whatever. And then come over here. You drive onto it. And it was like, wait, take you over.
Hmm.
It was weird, dude. It was weird.
It was weird.
Cool experience, but.
Yeah.
Mammoth Cave, too. Shout out Mammoth Cave. That place was pretty cool to explore. High ground in there. But, yeah, I'm excited to get out west and try some new stuff out and spend a bunch of money on gear because, you know, whatever. That's just the kind of person
the way
I am.
She goes.
Yeah. At least to me, it's some beneficial. I don't feel like I'm wasting money because I know I'll use it again. But yeah, I think we're at a good stopping point to wrap things up.
Yep.
You got anything else to add, either of you?
Nope.
All right.
It's a good episode.
Yeah. Appreciate everybody for listening, and we'll catch you in episode 17.